Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, it's Lois. If you're a person with a disability who's wanting to achieve a goal and is looking for some help to get there, then maybe I'm the person you need to talk to. Listen after the interview and find out more details of how I can help you to reach your goals and dreams. Thanks today to Hindenburg Pro for assisting us in producing the show. That's Hindenburg.com. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm Lois Strachan, your host for this show. Today, we are chatting to someone who I met and had the privilege of meeting up over a cup of coffee to talk about the work that she's doing. Erna van der Westhuizen and I had a long, fairly intricate conversation about her work. And as we spoke, I started realizing the immense implications of the work that she's been doing for groups that are marginalized, including people with disabilities here in Africa and globally. And of course, I took the opportunity to invite her to come and chat about her work on the show. So, Erna, welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me and to follow up our coffee chat.
Yeah, that was great. We must do that again soon.
So, we can do.
So I think the best place for us to start is just for me to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yes. Thank you again. So, I'm Erna. I often wonder if people ask me to introduce myself, how do I do that? Because, you know, even in the work we do, we are many different things for many different people. But for today, I'm Erna. I'm a mum of two amazing kids. I'm a wife, a partner. I'm also a sister to my sister, and a daughter to my parents. So, and of course, the dog or the animal parent. Let me go there rather. So I'm all of those things. So it's nice to bring all of that to the discussion.
And
thank you for having me.
And that's really only a scratch on the surface of who you are. I think we should dive straight into the topic of voice economy.
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah. What is voice economy?
So to answer the question, I need to step back a little in time. It really started, or the journey started, in December 2018. During a fellowship I did in South Africa on health equity. And part of the requirement of the fellowship was to do an advocacy project. And at that stage, I decided to focus on sort of estimating the out-of-pocket cost for persons with disabilities and their families. And so at first, I tried to collect this information myself, but I really struggled. And I realized that it was partly because parents of children with disabilities at that stage really couldn't relate to me for various reasons, of course, and we will talk about that. So in response to that, I reached out to networks I had built over the years And I partnered with 14 community leaders, different people from different communities, all rural communities in the Western Cape at that stage. Also, some of them parents of children with disabilities, and I asked them to be the field workers, sort of in an attempt to build some relation and you know, to see if I can collect this information for this project. And just in sort of in the practicalities of that, I started a WhatsApp group where we coordinated you know, our conversations and the work we did, and sort of without me really paying attention to that, it evolved into the educational space where we shared knowledge, you know, solved problems collectively, and also supporting each other. And after the project ended, the conversation continued naturally. And before I knew it, the group had grown from 14 members to 122 members as parents and sort of the field workers started to add more people to this group. And that was what I just call the accidental start to the parent movement that grew over 3,000 parents by the time I kind of stepped back. So sort of it's a long-winded way of answering your question, but I've always found myself passionate about doing, like in what I explained now, but also very curious to write about that. And sort of, you know, this personal curiosity, along with the realization that advocacy can sit in many ways and in many places, that actually led to my PhD project. And my research and my work there focused on trying to understand a model of this parent movement, exploring what happened, why happened, and if it could, you know, mean something for other groups. And within this process, the idea of voice economy actually was born. So that is a long story, but as you can hear, you know, it voice economy was to some extent an accident, and in other ways, it was sort of a well-planned kind of thing that happened. So maybe just to answer your question, then, sort of almost from an academic perspective, I define voice economy as a system where expression and exchange of individual and collective voices generate shared value. And I think that's the important part. Mm. And that this shared value can drive social transformation and change. And importantly, it enables marginalized groups of all sorts to share the knowledge within themselves, advocate for their rights, and then, of course, address barriers like ableism, for instance. A voice economy emphasizes strength-based practices. For instance, what I've seen within the group of 14 community leaders, but particularly also by using the digital technologies to make sure that everyone is heard and valued, and through doing that, fostering equality and social justice. So voice economy in itself is, like I said, I call it a system where expression and the change of individual and collective voices generate value. So very much as a traditional economy would generate value, that's the work of, you know, what happens within a voice economy.
So it's the power of feeling comfortable to share experiences, to voice questions, some of them that might be uncomfortable in other spaces, to build a shared experience, to build a unifying identity that can result in greater power of advocacy and, as we'll discuss later, policy changing, promoting policy changes.
Yeah, and to some extent, it's it's very simple. The idea is simple in that it's about creating opportunities and particularly supportive spaces for marginalized groups where, like you said now, people can safely express their opinions and experiences. So it is about building capacity and encouraging people to influence decisions that, you know, affect their lives. And therefore, you know, having the power to be heard is actually what the voice economy is ultimately about, or the way that I think about that. And like you were saying, it's voice expression and self-expression, obviously, through that.
And, you know, I think so often part of the challenge faced by marginalized groups is that we feel that our voices are silenced. So it's that opportunity to give voice, to give power, to grow in confidence and in unity and in shared experience. It's an incredibly powerful concept.
And it is, I think it's, you know, the reality that voices can be seen as a currency, you know, and the question then really, why is it that marginalized groups often, and I'm generalizing now, but often feel that, in any case, through my research, that, you know, that they don't get that opportunity. And I think it's exactly because of that, you know. It is the idea that before we start thinking about advocacy and before we start, you know, sort of wanting people to take up space within a system, we need to understand that it, from my perspective, that it starts with voice. And that voice in this case, you know, it's more than just the words me and you are exchanging, but it's also understanding that some of our voices need to find a space where it can be empowered and where we can practice how it feels that it's safe, you know, it lands safe somewhere to build the confidence for us to create this value that I referred to.
That's such a true statement. So what do you think are the most compelling reasons for promoting voice economy generally? What are the benefits?
So like I said earlier, for me, it's the dream or the idea that actually science maybe also that voices are seen as a vital currency, right, for building democracy and inclusion and participation. And even in my own practice, I overlook the fact that, for instance, for inclusive development to happen, people must first be given the space to reclaim the power of their voice, what I just mentioned earlier. And this really means that creating opportunity for people to grow in their confidence and to access the knowledge that they might not have access to, and use tools that allow them to engage meaningfully, especially conversations that may otherwise exclude them due to location, for instance, those living in rural areas. And even, you know, like I said earlier, like even after more than 20 years of being a practitioner, I have to consciously remind myself that the foundation of advocacy and community engagement, like I said earlier, must first be voiced. And we need to remind each other that voice is not a given for everyone. And therefore, you know, it's compelling to actually start thinking about this, because voice is not given for everyone, particularly in marginalized communities, like we see it now. And that is why our practice must prioritize creating spaces for safe expression and empowerment. And you know, that's my argument why I think it is important for us to think about this. And it was so interesting in my research that it showed clearly, like, for safe voice expression and for, you know, building a voice economy, people must first connect, right? Mm-hmm. and sometimes this connection must be intentionally designed, for it, especially when, you know, in the light of reality of barriers like distance and language and disability. But people need to connect before they can step into advocacy. And many cases that I've seen, even in my work as well, that marginalized groups need spaces where they can build confidence in their voice. Like I said earlier, also confidence in their ideas and the interactions, especially because of the history where we're engaging with those perceived by, you know, knowing better. So, you know, people are more qualified or have a better opinion than mine. And therefore, I believe strongly that a voice economy is a precursor to both development and advocacy.
I think there's also the need to build a level of trust, a level of shared community, shared identity. And that only really comes through a little bit of time, a little bit of shared conversation, and as you say, through that network. And through the power of voice and the opportunity to feel that one is heard without judgment.
And I guess that that brings us kind of to the conversation about, you know, why or how can a voice economy actually benefit those with disabilities? And I alluded to that earlier, but I think, you know, our experiences as persons with disabilities has been shaped for decades by systems that decide for us than rather with us.
Yeah.
You know, and we often read about this and we talk about this so very often that, you know, that there's used to be like a authority sort of, you know, built by professionals and you know, knowingly or unknowingly, really sidelining those very people who are affected by the issues we talked about, and unintentionally silencing each other, actually. And what we are communicating with that is that, that it means that the voices of persons with disabilities and other marginalized groups are not just undervalued, but they're actually ignored altogether. And within that way, I think when you think about a voice economy, it could really benefit, you know, those who are silent. I think that is really the point. And that, for instance, in my work with parents of children with disabilities, the experiences and the insights and sort of their daily struggles really are missing from the conversation that shapes services. I think this is so important. And without their input, really, policy really missing policy, and it risks to actually miss the point entirely. I hope that makes sense. But I think what we've seen now, for instance, lately with the dial-a-ride conversation in Cape Town, right? Where voices really drive improvements, you know, healthcare, educational support, etc. And what can happen when voice is actually more than just the ability to speak, but actually to be heard and respected and action, act upon. So that is why building a voice economy for me is so important, because it's about creating intentional spaces where voices, where voice empowerment is a priority. I think the more I read and think about this, imagine a space where voice empowerment is a priority.
Yeah.
And self-representation is encouraged, not just allowed, but encouraged. And where expression can happen in a safe environment. That's what you, what you referred to earlier. And imagine just the collection action that becomes possible, but it's also sustainable, right? Because we benefit from something like a voice economy.
Yeah. Well, those of our listeners who are not local to the Cape Town space where both Anna and I live, Dial-A-Ride is a paratransport system that is severely under-resourced. And a few weeks ago, our local government said they were deciding to limit the use of Dial-A-Ride to very few people, that were excluding many people from being able to get to study, to get to social engagements. They were excluding whole communities like the blind and visually impaired community. And as a whole, the disability community in Cape Town came together and worked to start shifting that policy decision with a successful outcome that has resulted in local government reconsidering what they were going to be doing. We haven't yet had a final resolution to what's going to happen, but it was really incredible to see the power of the voices that came together to be raised in protest against that step. And thanks for raising that as an example of how voice economy can really add more complexity and create a shift in policy that can have an impact. So that's it's a brilliant example and one that is very topical.
And that's the intentional space, right, that we are talking about, is creating that intentional space where voices can be empowered and come together. I think it's so powerful.
Let's talk about how digital technologies can really have an impact on the power and the status of voice economy. What kind of technologies have you found have worked successfully in creating powerful voice economies?
So maybe I just want to step back, so to say. So my reasoning and my logic around the digital component of voice economy, and because I mean obviously we want to make this this idea practical, right? We want to like build a voice economy, so to say, and the component of technology response to the often displacement and the rural reality that we are dealing with in, let's just say, in South Africa, which means that people are disconnected, whether that might be due to distance or the cost of traveling, or now even thinking about the Dial-A-Ride example, that often means that people don't have access to education or good quality information. And sort of in the COVID time, we've seen that technology is a new way of you know, bridging these gaps and sort of addressing these barriers. Like I said, in COVID, we sort of got a feel of what remote work looked like, how virtual communities have become a common practice, and the benefits of that. But obviously, you know, that this is often only possible for those who have reliable internet and digital skill, of course. And the right hardware and software. And it, for instance, assumes that English is the main language of the discussion. So, for instance, a platform like LinkedIn, for instance, right, who are sort of, you know, with a very particular focus and a sort of business and recruitment kind of discussion. But by default, because it's in English and, you know, require connection and connectivity and so forth, exclude a certain, you know, certain groups of people. And then in the case of disability, there's an added challenge, so to say, that not only connectivity, but also the responsibility, for instance, of parents of children with disabilities often prevent them from traveling or leaving home. You know, so if you are caring for your child, for instance, and that it's It's not because they don't want to travel or don't want to move to different places, but it's because of the systemic barriers. For instance, like we mentioned, the lack of safe transport, for instance, for children, or transport, but they cannot take the devices, for instance, like a mobility device, for instance, with them. And as a result of that, really, it means that large groups of people are effectively unable to raise their voices, right, and participate in changing the very systems that actually, disadvantage them. And so therefore, I think that, and my research has shown that technology can and does play a critical role in addressing this need. And therefore, when I think about voice economy and being practical around that, it is also about really the hardware and the software. Voice economy is about creating community. People must connect. That we said earlier, people must connect. And through that connection, voice empowerment happens when people practice, taking up their voice and what that means. Within spaces where they can express, but in some cases, technology actually makes that possible, And just to maybe share an example, in other cases, for instance, technology can be used in organizational spaces. So I've been working with an organization that is building a voice economy for themselves as an organization. And so in that case, it's for them about creating an organizational voice, right? So that's a very different type of voice, so to say. But they still use the same principles of voice empowerment and expression. And so what they did is they actually created an incredible tool that not only allows them to capture their own voices as staff, but also the voices of their beneficiaries. And that's just now an example of how organizations can build voice economies. But within this example, the importance and the magic, really, and the opportunity of digital technology, showing how that can be used in bringing people together, expressing and in building spaces, intentional spaces for voice empowerment.
Okay. Let's look at how you see voice economy working as a tool to promote greater inclusion, particularly of marginalized groups. How do you see that playing out?
I think for me, it's sort of the question that comes to my mind usually is how. Right. So if we, for instance, say that in South Africa, for instance, we talk about, we are invited as South Africans to discussions that affect our lives. If you think about like national elections, we are really invited to do that, right? To say what we want to say and so forth. But it is still the question of how do people actually do that? If you are a person with a disability or a family member of a person with a disability, or actually any marginalized group, if you are invited to say what you think and contribute to the conversation, it is genuinely a question of how. Like, how do you actually do that? It's complex in that way, but it's also where the solution of a voice economy can come in, right? And through that, really drive transformation, because just in my experience that, when we create the tools and conversations where inclusion and participation are intentional, that's so important for me, cutting across language and geography, we can make it our business to make sure that all people are, all voices are heard. And in that way, it actually is a powerful source to drive transformation. And maybe if I can even, go so far to talk about you know, how can that positive force even drive policy change, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think sort of, again, on the practical side of voice economy, through building the technology, through building tools where, you know, people can raise their voices, which can be this positive sort of force. Of course, what's behind that is data, right? So it's key for policy discussions. We know that. And again, the question of, but how do people actually contribute, and how do people, you know, raise their voices so that actually can become a source of data. And in my experience, policy inputs often happen through sort of desktop research, right? And that it very rarely include the general public, simply because of the cost and the difficulty of knowing where to start. I mean, yeah. If we just now say, you know, you are invited to say, you know, why you need a dial-a-ride, just using that same example, then the simple question is, but how? Where do I go to actually say that? And, you know, and that is where, you know, the power of technology, for instance, again, comes in. But I've seen how ordinary South Africans, you know, can drive transformation on policy level, really, when actually they know how and where to raise their voices, when they're connected with groups where they feel safe, and where they can do that, and where they can actually say what they want to say. And like I said earlier, just the organization that's building a voice economy, just I've seen how the lived realities of clients, for instance, can directly influence organization's response, for instance, where that's possible. And just again, in my experience and through my research, it's possible that when empowerment takes place, expression is safe.
That is true.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people would like to learn a little bit more about you and about the work that you're doing in voice economy. Mm. How can they find you online?
They can email me. They can call me. They can also look at Voice Economy's website. It's very much a startup, so see it within that context. But it's www.voiceeconomy.org. You will see my contact details there as well. And of course, on social media, I'm sharing some more thoughts on my research on social media and through videos and so on. So, I invite people to connect, and share ideas, really.
Great. And what we'll do is we will add the links to the social media sites that you would like people to use and to your website. And we'll add those into the podcast description for the episode.
Right.
For ease of reference.
Yeah. So
as a final question then, what advice would you give from an individual from a marginalized group who's been listening to this and saying, I want to create a movement based on voice economy? How should they start?
Yeah. Now, my first instinct is to say to have a dual approach. And what I mean by that is to build networks of support in whatever way, you know, that's possible. Sometimes it's, you know, for few people to connect. In other cases, like what I've shared now, it's sometimes 3,000 people that connect. Mm. But important to build networks of support, like I said earlier, for that to be the starting place. But specifically for that, networks of support to ensure that voice empowerment can happen. So that's really important, the first sort of side to it. But at the same time, also focusing on policy change and long-term change, right? Where we can create lasting impact. I think that is important. And the work must go into empowering the voices, so to speak, and to make sure that those, you know, to invite everyone to the table. So if I must give advice, I would say have a dual approach. The first one is connect people, create spaces where this connection and voice empowerment can happen. And that usually happens when people are safe to express within a group where they belong to. And at the same time, focusing on long-term change. And that happens through data, of course. Or one tool could be data, and that is where technology comes in. And I think it's important to know that, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It creates through creating spaces where people feel safe and connected, and that happens at different time spans for different people. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, find connection immediately. For others, it takes a long time. And self-expression grows out of those experiences. And that, for me, is the core of collective advocacy. So if I can give any advice, that would be my advice. And, of course, to please connect with me and my team, and let's think about how we can create a voice economy together.
Super. Thank you so much, Anna van der Westhuizen. And thank you for coming and sharing the work that you're doing and this really powerful concept of voice economy with us today on A Different Way of Seeing. It's been really great to chat and to learn a little bit more about the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to connecting again.
Hi, it's Lois again. I'm not certain if you know, but I am a coach who works specifically with people with disabilities. If you have a disability and are wanting to achieve your goals, or maybe think through some of the challenges that you're facing in your professional or personal life, or want to take up a new opportunity, a new adventure, but just don't seem to be able to get to doing it, let's explore how I can help you. Hop onto the Contact Me form on my website, www.loisstrachan.com. That's Lois Strachan, LOISSTRACHAN.com. And sign up for a 30-minute discovery call so we can chat to see if I am the right person to help you to achieve your goals. Contact me now for that free 30-minute discovery call on loisstrachan.com. I'd love to have the opportunity of helping you to achieve your goals.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you, so find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Jassy. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.